Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios back with you. A couple of things. I want to give you an update on something different. Justin, from One News Now this morning, the county clerk in Kentucky, Rowan County Clerk Kim Davis, she's the one who has been refusing to marry same-sex couples. And the Supreme Court, I told you earlier, refused to hear her case. So she has decided this morning she will still not perform these marriages. And let me read this to you from One News Now. Rowan County Clerk Kim Davis emerged from her office Tuesday morning after some couples were denied the licenses. She asked David Moore and David Ermald, who've been rejected four times, to leave. And they refused, surrounded by reporters and cameras. Ermald said, "We're not leaving until we have a license." Davis responded, "Then you're going to have a long day." The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday declined to intervene, leaving Davis no legal grounds to refuse to grant licenses to gay couples. A district judge could now hold her in contempt, which carries huge fines and jail time. And one other thing, there was a, if I can find it here, there was also a huge rally over the weekend in, I'll get it for you in just one second here. It was in Birmingham, Alabama, 20,000 people who came together as far as from China, marching where Martin Luther King marched. And it was Glenn Beck organized this with Pastor Lowe from the Guiding Light Church. It's a black mega church in Birmingham. And they are looking for a way to create an army of Christians to find a way to bring Christians out of Syria. So there's just people are organizing and meeting. I just told you there were 10,000 in South Carolina over the weekend. There were huge amounts of people in Nashville at a Tea Party rally with Donald Trump. So people are exorcised. They are upset. They're trying to do something. And one of those issues, of course, is the president has made tremendous gains since he's been in office. And I think one of the main things he has his sights set on right now is the Second Amendment. John Lott is my guest, and of course, he's the founder of Crime Prevention Research Center. John, what do you think about the White House and the Justice Department's response to these criminal acts, like the shooting of the deputy sheriff, the shooting, you know, the reporters? What do you think about their response to all of this? How would you describe it?
Well, it's not very uniform. When police are shot, whether it be in St. Louis or in Houston now or other things, the White House is silent. They're not going to send multiple officials from the Justice Department to go to that funeral that's there. But, you know, unfortunately, the president, even before the facts are known, whether it's Michael Brown's shooting in Ferguson or other cases, immediately chimes in on those things and creates what turns out to be a false impression about what happened in those cases. And you get people upset and agitated. And, you know, the comments that the sheriff had that you had on earlier about what he thought may have contributed, I fear it could be true that these types of exaggerations and false statements about police supposedly targeting young black men to go and kill them, is really reprehensible, but it has consequences. We've already seen police officers killed in New York City and other places specifically targeted because people felt that that's what the police were doing to black individuals. And, so it's divided people that shouldn't be divided. And I'll give you one interesting statistic. You know, if blacks in general really believed that police didn't care about solving crimes committed against them, were racist towards them, what do you think would be the rate that they would report violent crimes to police? You would think that other racial groups would end up reporting violent crimes to police at a higher rate. But in fact, no matter what category you look at, whether you look at poor people, whether you look at people who live in high crime areas or people who live in suburbs or rural areas, blacks report violent crimes committed against blacks at about 10 percentage points higher than whites report violent crimes committed against whites. Both groups report at higher rates than either Hispanic or Asians report violent crimes committed against them, which is the exact opposite. It seems like there's a lot of people in the African-American community who know, who trust the police will solve their crimes. If they say, if you really believe that they would just arrest somebody based on their race, not whether or not they actually committed the crime, you would think that a lot of blacks would be very reticent. Why go and tell the police about a crime if they're just going to arrest some other random black person there rather than getting the guy who really committed it? And yet, people's actions, I think, obviously there's a lot of people who commit crimes in different communities. They may not be too happy with the police. But, you know, if you look at people's actions, I think there are a lot of blacks who readily turn to police for help, and they turn to them at higher rates than other racial groups do.
Do you have any study? Do you have any? It's hard to get stats. So I know this would be a very small sample, but are you tracking any possible correlation between this whole Black Lives Matter movement or just the whole movement to stir up the black community against law enforcement and the number of policemen that have been shot that could be attributed to that movement?
It's pretty hard. I mean, you have some anecdotal stories on this stuff. As you say, it's not a sample. What I've been trying to do with the Crime Prevention Research Center is we've been going back over several years and putting together a large data set to look at police officer shootings, to see who they shoot, see what the conditions were, whether a crime was being committed, whether the person that was being shot was armed or not, the race of both the police officer and the person who was shot, to try to answer these types of questions, because we've seen too much really garbage put out there. You know, when you'll have claims being put out that police are 20 times supposedly more likely to shoot young black males than they are to shoot young white males, a claim that you've heard on the Sunday morning talk shows multiple times. You know, that claim is wrong in so many ways. First of all, it's only based on about 1.2% of police departments reporting the numbers. And they're not randomly reported police departments. They're police departments from very heavily black areas. So it'd be kind of like you look at Harlem, police shootings by race in Harlem, and then you assume that's going to be the same rate that blacks and whites are shot across the whole country. It's just complete nonsense. And yet these things get repeated without explaining how the data is put together or what it means. No attempt to control for who's being shot or whether they were armed or whether they were involved in commission of crime. Nothing like that at all. And I think it really does people a disservice. You know, when the Obama administration put out its report on the Ferguson Police Department, I was really outraged. I tried to go and get their data. Fox News tried to go and get their data. They refused to let anybody look at the data for their report. And, you know, we're supposed to trust them. But you look at it, you know, just by looking at it, that they've made a lot of mistakes. That it's not an investigative report. It's a political report. They don't even report their results. You know, they don't report it in results. I mean, I've been an academic for 30 years. I've been involved in depositions. I've testified in court. You know, I've published over 100 peer-reviewed academic journal articles myself. You know what to look for in order to criticize. Well, they purposely leave out all sorts of information that any normal report would have there that would allow somebody to evaluate its veracity. And, you know, it's a political statement more than anything else. I just give you one simple example. They, all the time they say, well, you know, 67% of Ferguson's population was black, but 85% of the people that were stopped in traffic stops were black. So that proves racial discrimination. What they don't mention to you is Ferguson is surrounded by, it's touching seven other cities. It's in the middle of those. And the average population for those seven other cities is 87% black. And so, you know, just trying to account for where the people were residents of who were given tickets. And I talked to police in the area, and it's pretty clear to me that they set up speed traps and things like that to catch non-Ferguson residents. They didn't want their Ferguson residents to be upset with the traffic tickets. They wanted to have people from other communities pay for it. And that wasn't because they just disliked blacks. It's just because they wanted people who didn't live in their city to go and get the traffic ticket.
Was this report written by the Justice Department, John?
Correct.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's quantifiable right there to me, that there is an effort underway to paint the worst possible picture of America's police, the worst possible interpretation from the highest authorities. So it's not, that is not just anecdotal. There's quantifiable evidence right there. You know, I want to go back to something because I wanted to make a point. I wonder if you heard this. I want to make sure that you did. I mentioned Andy Parker, the father of Allison Parker. She was the slain reporter in Southern Virginia. And so he and his wife, and he's been all over. He was on the very night she was shot. He was out there talking, which I have to tell you, as a parent, I don't get that. I don't get that. I just can't imagine the grief of that, and I can't imagine going out to be on television to talk about it. I just don't understand people that can do that. But he is an actor. He was on Broadway. So now he is talking about he wants to be the spokesperson for more gun control. But then I heard him say, John, that he maybe will have to go out and get his own gun now because he's getting threats. So he thinks maybe he should have a gun now. It's just... when reality hits, it's a little different, isn't it?
Yeah, well, who knows if he's getting threats or not. I hope not. But you know, at this point, it's hard to know what to believe or not on a lot of these things. But, you know, within hours, you had Governor McAuliffe, the Democrat governor of Virginia, calling him and encouraging him to go and speak out on gun control issues. You know, again, they had no idea what the facts were. They didn't even know how the killer there had obtained his weapon until late that night.
Yeah.
Even McCullough said he didn't know the facts of the case of how that he had obtained it when reporters had asked him earlier that day. You know, you've had gun control groups call up the father there and encourage him to speak out. Everybody from Bloomberg to Mark Kelly.
Exactly. It's a political moment. It's their opportunity to take advantage of the death of a young girl and of a dad who I think, I'm just going to say, my editorial remark is that just as unseemly. Yeah, it seems like his moment in the sun. That's what I think. And now, personally, though, he thinks he might want a gun. So that disqualifies him from any moves he might want to do to stop others from being able to make themselves safe. John, I promised to open the phone lines. Let's at least take one call here because we're running out of time. Let's go to Bruce on line one.
My call. I appreciate you taking my call, and God bless you. I listen to your show every morning.
Thanks, Bruce.
The reason I called is kind of parallel. And Australia outlawed their guns, and my understanding is they've been having mass killings down there. And I wonder if you had heard anything about that, what your take is on it. Just wanted to throw it out there in the show. Thank you, and I'll listen.
Okay, did you hear that, John?
Yeah, no, I did. If you go to our website at crimeresearch.org and you search under the name Australia, you'll find the testimony that I gave to the Australian Senate last fall. They had invited me to testify there. And, you know, first of all, Australia didn't ban guns. What they did was they had a big buyback of guns. They bought back about a third of the guns that people owned. The thing is, people have been able to go and buy guns afterwards. And the fact that gun ownership rate now in Australia is back to where it was before the buyback. And so if people want to make claims that this has reduced crime or whatever, you should have seen an immediate big drop in crime and then an increase. And that you see nothing like remotely like that. Firearms murders have fallen afterwards, but they were falling at the same rate beforehand. They didn't have a big drop and then an increase. Armed robberies actually went up right after the buyback, and then rather than going up further, as gun ownership went increase began to go down.
That. That's amazing.
You can see the graphs that with the Australian data from the testimony that I gave. If you just go to our website, crimeresearch.org.
Crimeresearch.org, and I think that's a great resource. And isn't that amazing? It's almost like you're making that up, John. It's like that's just too convenient, but I know you're not, because those are the stats that you've showed repeatedly. You're a statistician, by the way. You deal in facts, and I'm the person who gives opinions here, but you deal in facts, and they can be found at crimeresearch.org. John, it's always a pleasure to get your wisdom and your information. Thank you for making time for us this morning.
The Great views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.